This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is one that I was wanting to record some time ago when I was in Las Vegas and I happened to run into Les Arnold, and there was an opportunity for us to get together, but we didn't really have the time. Well, recently the opportunity did afford itself to me when actually Les came to Houston. He was here with David Sandy and some other people, and we got a chance to hang out for a couple of days, actually. It was during the time when we had the Super Bowl, and we were not here in Houston, but we all went together to watch that. Another long story. Anyhow, I had an opportunity really to kind of sit down and to chat with Les Arnold about some interesting, his background, and just kind of talk in general, but you'll also learn a lot about him. And if you don't know much about Les, let me just briefly say he was one of the first people who had helped to found the Long Beach Mystics out in California, which is a legendary group of many members, and we talk about that then as well. And then also, here in later life, you may have seen him perhaps on some of the television shows like The Masters of Illusion that's produced by Gay Blackstone, in which that he performs with his daughter, and they go by Les Arnold and Dazzle. And if you didn't get a chance to see them on television, you will see them at the IBM convention coming up this summer in Scottsdale, Arizona. Anyhow, a lot of really interesting things that he talks about, but one of the things that I really got as a takeaway from this is, and I want you to pay attention to as we kind of get into that, and that is how he developed his character and how he stays true to his character. In other words, it's important you know who you are on stage. And even if you're a close-up guy, pretty much what kind of a performer are you? Are you a con man? Are you a sleight-of-hand expert? Are you just someone who magic just happens around you? Whatever it happens to be, you need to know who your character is. And then once you have defined that, to be true to that character and then continue to find effects that actually help to enhance that character. And he talks about that. And I think that's pretty fascinating and part of the core of what I think is this podcast. So please welcome my guest this week. I know you're going to enjoy listening to Les Arnold here on The Magic Word.
This interview, Ron, will only take about 5 minutes because being me, I got nothing to say.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are in Houston, Texas, but we've had some neighbors to the west of us, actually, who had come in for a visit in Houston, actually to kind of use Houston as a jumping-off point. They had been here and went up to Austin to see Esther's Follies, see Ray Anderson, went over to Lake Charles to see Chip Romero and see his wonderful Doug Henning collection and other kinds of stuff, and we'll probably get in a little bit of that. But I am anxious to speak with this gentleman here this morning, as he has, I know, a lot to say, although he modestly says he doesn't, but I think he does. But please welcome my guest, Mr. Les Arnold. Hey, Les.
Hey, how you doing, Scott? Good to see you.
Fine. Good to see you then as well. So glad that you came out. From Los Angeles, or are you in Vegas?
Well, I'm actually out of Long Beach, California, which is just south of Los Angeles.
Okay. Because I knew that you were such good friends with Bill Smith, and Bill was supposed to come up over here, but he didn't actually come up over here. So want to... he was having, what was it, hip surgery? Is that right?
Or? Well, he was recovering from that. We were going to come up last year and do all of this stuff, but what happened was... you're right. He had the hip surgery scheduled, and then he had a big show that he had to get out that he wanted to make sure he got it out on time.
Right.
So that's kind of threw a monkey wrench into the week for him. So hopefully the rest of the 2019 will be a better year for him.
Yeah, let's hope so, too. Yeah, we're kind of at the beginning of this year, and I'm sure he's got a lot of stuff he's working on then, too. Has he built a lot of your equipment, a lot of your stuff?
No, not at all.
Really?
As a matter of fact, Bill and I met back when he joined the Long Beach Mystics. Mm-hmm. I think he was about 15 or 16 years old. I was the older guy in the club. So, mm-hmm. you know, I've got a few years on him, and I was a builder. So, mm-hmm. you know, we had that connection, and I didn't want to go into building. So, you know, I performed, and then I taught. So I taught woodshop.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was going to talk about, of course, getting into the Long Beach Mystics, because I knew that you were a member of that with all the legendary guys and gals who have come through that and gone on to be well-known magicians. And it's amazing that at some point in time that existed. It's too bad we don't, to my knowledge, have something like that that is a kind of a, if you will, a breeding ground of where that magicians can go and share ideas.
Well, it was a fun time. And back on your question regarding Bill and his building, we've been pretty close over the years, and he went into it full-time building and working with Blackstone. And whenever he'd have overflow work, particularly in the summer or a particular deal, he's quite busy, he would then farm it out to me, mm-hmm. or I would come into the shop and build some of the props. So that's kind of how the building thing worked.
How'd you learn your building trade? Were you a shop teacher or something?
Yes. Well, as a matter of fact, my mom was quite handy. She referred to herself as Old Man Fixit's daughter. And my mom was the daughter of the great Leon of vaudeville fame, who
really?
Was a headliner. And his contemporaries were Thurston, Blackstone, Houdini, et cetera, Dante. So he was quite handy and creative, and that passed down, you know, through my mom. So actually when I got into magic, I was one of those kids that I started out getting into my brother's magic set, and I like to make things. So even as a young kid, whether it was models or whatever, mm-hmm. as soon as I had the interest in magic, I found that I could make props and I was a young teenager. Well, I got into it when I was about 10, so
right.
I was already making stuff when I was 10.
I'd forgotten all about that, too. You just mentioned it. That brought back the smell of airplane glue when you said that. I remember as a child, now, of course, glue sniffing, is, I guess, is a thing, and you can't easily buy airplane glue, but, yeah, used to have those Revell modeled airplanes, you know, of
right.
the Fokkers and all the Spitzers and, you know, planes and things, and, yeah, I remember doing that. Golly. Yeah, I can see how certainly that would lead one into wanting to be a builder, you know, because of all the intricate pieces and putting the glue with the toothpick inside there and everything. So,
well, it got me early notoriety in the club
mm-hmm.
because I, like I said, I got into a Misto Magic set that my older brother had.
Mm-hmm.
My brother Eddie had this Misto Magic set, and he also had a nickels to dimes trick.
Okay.
My dad was quite active in the Veterans of Foreign Wars, American Legion, and he would go in before conventions and decorate the town. And those were our vacations where he would drag us along. And highlight was maybe to get to see a drum corps competition or a parade. And meanwhile, I would see my older brother, who was about 14, hustling these legionnaires and say, hey, you want to see a trick? He would do his nickels to dimes, and he would borrow four nickels. And but he didn't do nickels to dimes. He just made them vanish, and so he made 20 cents every time. You know,
okay.
Now
sure.
In today's money, you know, that would be maybe like about
a buck.
Equivalent to about $4.
Oh, okay,
I mean, it was back in the early 50s. So
mm-hmm.
When I got to be around 10, my brother, who was, you know, 6 years older than me, yeah, he had no interest anymore. I got into a set, started playing around, and next thing you know, I'm going to the local novelty shop, and I think I bought a set of Adams cups and balls, which I have to this day. And and I did them for my uncle Leon, who was the son of the great Leon. And I didn't know that he was still interested himself into magic. So he saw my interest, and he gave me a couple of items that belonged to my grandfather, a change bag and a little square circle. And so that kind of got me started. And then I was, you know, he said, hey, there's a club in Long Beach called the Long Beach Mystics. Merlin Eifert of Ring 96 said they sponsor it. And here's his number if you're interested. And so we made the phone call, and I went to my first Long Beach Mystics meeting and met up with other individuals. It had been in existence for about 4 years at that time. This was like around 1959, and that had started at the back of Brownie's Hobby Shop in Long Beach in 1955. So I wasn't a charter member, but that was the beginning of it, and the older guys kind of took me under their wing, like James Hamilton and Howard McConaughey, Tom Gardner, that were older than me, but when they saw me at about age 12, 13, building some magic, it kind of like, you know, wow, this guy's pretty handy. So I was handy before that. And then, of course, in high school, woodworking, so forth and so on. Then in college, I majored in industrial arts, which set me on the path to becoming a woodshop teacher, which I did that for the next, you know, when I graduated. So
yeah, one of my best friends, Don Weiberg, retired as a woodshop teacher up in Chicago, and was a magician. Is a magician, you know. You probably know Don. You passed international president.
Yeah,
IBM.
Yeah.
The fellow James you had mentioned, was he the guy who did the great did Alexander?
Yes.
Okay.
His name was Jim Mazalski. He passed away a couple of years ago, and but he went by his middle name was. Hamilton, so mm-hmm. he went by James Hamilton, but those of us who knew him back when we were kids was Mazalski, but nobody could pronounce it or spell it.
But he had some original pieces from Alexander. How did that come about?
Yeah, he had Alexander's tales, and he had some props, and he was a big buff and studied as much as he could about Alexander.
Mm-hmm. And then he did, I remember the stage show, I'd seen that two or three times. Seems like at conventions, I believe, that he had performed some places.
Correct. He did an Alexander act. He also did a Chinese act. And he was into a lot of that period stuff.
Right, right. I have to ask then, obviously, of being related to Great Leon, that did you ever meet any of his counterparts?
Well, he passed away when I was about 6.5 years
okay.
old.
So and nothing so you really remember.
My only recollection is bouncing on his knee, mm-hmm. and he had a wooden mask that was hanging in his office that every time I went by, I would close my eyes and run by because
and
it scared
out.
Me. Yeah.
So. But how about some of his contemporaries? Did they later come by?
Well, they were young.
Relationship?
Yeah.
With
I mean,
your grandmother and...
When I, Al Jansen, mm-hmm. Dante's son, I met, and Ruth Jansen was a friend of my mom's, and of course the Larson family, we're all very close with, you know, William Larson Sr. and my grandparents. So, yeah, there was that connection. And people that were young and hanging around, like, for example, Marvin Roy today, you know, he's 93. We became friends many, many years ago. And obviously he was a young man that was around at that time.
Mm-hmm.
There were guys that I met in the SAM, like Fred Rickard, and a lot of people that would tell me about things that my grandfather did.
Now, I assume you saw Dante perform, or did you know him? Or
I didn't see him perform. But my very first magic show was an SAM Night of Magic in Hollywood that my parents took me to. And at that show, I met Blackstone Sr., who was not performing, but he was sitting in the front row signing. You know, I got his autograph at the time and talked to him. And later years, he would hang out at Hollywood Magic and do tricks behind the counter. Let's see, others on that show was... oh, gosh. Aubrey was on the show. The Sades were on the show. Off the top of my mind right now, I can't think of who else I saw, but it was quite an impressive show.
And by that time, you were way into magic. It wasn't like this.
No, that I was only about 11 okay. when I saw this show.
So and, that just showed you the opportunity that could lie ahead for
right,
a magician.
Okay. Right. So...
And with that and joining the club, then other people kind of came on. How did they sort out members for the Long Beach Mystics?
Well, you came to a few meetings, if you're interested, to let them know that you were serious. So after your couple of meetings, you would just say that you'd like to apply for membership, and then you had to try out, and you would do a little performance, and then they would ask you to leave the room, and they would vote on you. And it was just a running bit that they'd ask, you know, who wants him to be a member? The membership would raise their hands. And then, of course, when they would ask, you know, any nays, and you'd hear everybody in the room going, nay, you know, so just to kind of jerk them around. But everybody made it in. And it was a club for juniors that was, you know, from 8 to 21.
Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of helped each other as far as giving encouragement and suggestions on their performance, because you were required pretty much to perform at your meetings.
Well, it was pretty simple. I mean, it was a very kind of kickback in the beginning. There were those that performed a lot, like Jim Hamilton, they would always have an event every month. It was a monthly meeting, and we were sponsored by Ring 96. So people like Merlin Eifert would be there. That was our liaison, and they sponsored us. And at the end of the year, they would give an award to Mystic of the Year that had showed a lot of potential and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they had their little hand in it. But as we grew and as I got older and I was a teenager and it was somewhat my turn to be president, and it was pretty much run by a clique. In other words, if you showed a lot of interest and worked at it, et cetera, besides just showing up at the monthly meeting, you know, you were accepted into the group.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like almost your turn to be, you know, an officer, president. Generally, you were secretary, vice president, and then president. Mm-hmm. And when it was my turn, I think I was about 16 when I was president. And it was at that time I saw some of the stuff we had done in the past. We had an annual picnic. We went to the Long Beach Hobby Show, where we had a booth and a little stage in our booth. And then you'd get, the big deal was to perform on the big stage at the Long Beach Auditorium, which is now the Long Beach Pacific Terrace Theater. It was torn down. They kept the stage part and the flies and built the Pacific Terrace Theater around it. But anyway, that was a big deal for us. And then we would generally have a big show and a contest maybe for Christmas. When I was president, I decided to just over-accent everything. I would, rather than just send out a postcard, I'd call each member and talk to them individually, because we only had about maybe 15 members, but make it sound like, you know, it revolved around them. So I'd have a good turnout.
Mm-hmm.
And then each time we had a meeting, I'd make sure we had something going, a contest, a special event, rather than just show up with a deck of cards and learn a card trick.
I think that's an important suggestion there for all clubs to take note, because there are too many clubs who will just have a meeting date set and expect people to show up and say, anybody bring something to do tonight, as opposed to having a theme and you talk to people in advance, say you're going to be required to do such and such, and to talk about something. In other words, you have a meeting planned as opposed to a meeting place and you just show up to do something. So that was pretty wise.
Well, we so the club membership started to grow, and we started, you know, having more events where the club, some of, you know, the members, well, okay, this would have been about 1963, I'm president, and I decide we're going to have an annual show. So we put on, I went and did a show for the Parks and Recreation Department, and in exchange they gave me the use of a little park auditorium, which we called it It's Amazing. I called around to see who wanted to be on the show. We invited the Hollywood crowd. We were in Long Beach, and that would take in SAMers and IBMers, who were very supportive. The Larson family, Bob Wagner, and all those guys from, you know, that area. It was a big deal for us if they showed up.
Sure.
So we had approximately about... on a good meeting night, if we had a contest, if we got 30 people, that was a big deal. And if it was the Christmas party deal and we got 50 people show up, we were elated. Well, when we had this little thing that had a stage and curtains, and we were expecting and hoping for 50 to 60 people, we had 120 people show up.
Wow.
And it packed the house.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the start of the annual It's Amazing show.
Mm-hmm.
And recognition of some of the talents that we were actually kids doing acts. So our life was like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland. I mean, I watched those old movies, and they got nothing on us because it escalated, you know, year after year. We went to a bigger auditorium from there, and about the third one that we had, or fourth one, well, actually the third one, we had at a junior high auditorium, and Mike O'Donovan was into music, and his music teacher was the orchestra teacher at the school. So we had a full our orchestra play our show on the third It's Amazing. And so every year we would have something odd like that. One year we rented searchlights that we put out in front of the theater like they would have for movie...
Right, premieres.
Premieres. Mm-hmm. The only sad thing about it is the show was generally starting at 7 o'clock, and it was in the middle of summer, and it didn't get dark till 8:30, so you didn't get any bang out of it until it came out for intermission and saw these searchlights and thought, oh, wow, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, so, interesting.
We always did stuff like that, and we always went and figured over the top. And that's what kind of grew the interest of the membership, and it started to grow. And Stan Allen, you know, tried out and had quite an impressive audition, and he's a few years younger than I am. And when I heard he had a drum set, you know, boy, I was interested in going over to his place and beat on those drums. So that started our friendship. So, and then it was a few years later that Mike Caveney tried out for the club. He lived out in Arcadia, which is about 35 miles north of Long Beach, and had no way to get to the meetings. So he had to wait until he was 16 and he could drive. But he then came into the club with a very impressive thimble act that, and it just started growing from there until, you know, we were doing a lot of cool stuff. And actually, now it was, rather than we were sponsored by Ring 96, Ring 96, you know, was in our shadow. We would go to conventions and take 9 out of the 12 trophies. So it was great, and it was... was a lot of fun. And yeah, you're right. When you mention some, you know, we were the club in the Southland. We had, you know, upcoming through that club was not only myself, but
Mark Kalin.
Mark Kalin.
And Kevin James.
Kevin James.
Jonathan Pendragon. And yeah, Bill
Not
Smith.
Jonathan. Jonathan was in the LA area.
LA, okay, sorry.
But you had Mike
David
Weber.
Diebel. Mike Weber, yeah, David Diebel.
David Diebel. Mm-hmm. And the list goes on and on, you know, Bill Smith, Ron Anderson, and Scott Bryan, who went on to be a clown in the Ringling Show, Todd Robbins. Scott was in the very first clown college for Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey.
Was Tina circus. Involved back then at that time?
Tina was kind of came in on her own and was working the castle.
Is that where she and Mike met?
That's where, yeah, Mike and Tina met and then became an item and we've been together ever since.
Yeah.
So there was, the L.A. area had a couple of magic clubs. There was the Young Sorcerers that would meet at Joe Berg's magic shop. And then there was John Zweers of the SAM 22 sponsored a club that was a scout post. I don't recall which number it was, but I know that Dale Hyman was active in that particular group.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was pretty much it until when we were getting so much recognition. You know, the Larsons and the Castle, well, they had the Castle. They had the annual show, It's Magic. Mm-hmm. They had Genie Magazine. They had The Banquet. Everything kind of revolved. They had a monopoly except for a junior club.
Right. They didn't have the junior club at that time? Okay.
No. And then they decided, you know, Bob Dorian and Dick Zimmerman, or Diane Zimmerman,
Diane. Mm-hmm.
You know, sponsored the Junior Castle. And it gave young performers quite an opportunity to be around the castle, their library, it afforded them quite a bit of things. And so I think that was kind of like the beginning of the end of the Mystics. Stan had a magic shop in later years, which at that time kind of kept it, the club, alive. They would meet at his magic shop for about, that went on for about 5 years, and then so the club lasted.
I'd forgotten almost about that
years.
Magic shop, because that was what started Magic Magazine, because he had that newsletter
correct
from his magic shop that went out regularly, and then it had news bits, and a little at a time it became more of a subscription thing from a newsletter to a magazine.
Right, and then he decided, gee, should I do this? So,
right,
you know, after talking to a lot of different people, he kind of filled a need that wasn't there. His newsletter was a little bit on the edgy side, whereas, you know, you got kind of a watered-down version of reviews of magic shows from the others. So it did pique an interest there.
Right.
And Stan was always one to think outside the box.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, thank you. Yeah, I've spoken with a few other of the alum in the past about the Long Beach Mystics. I always kind of like to fill in these bits and pieces, you know, some other stories and things like that that I hadn't heard. So that's interesting, too. And as far as the development of your act then with Les Arnold and Dazzle, have you had more than one Dazzle?
Well, as a matter of fact, there's been a couple of course, Dazzle's my daughter, Alex.
Yeah.
And she's a professional dancer with a degree in dance and taught at Cal State Long Beach in the dance department for a few years before her and her husband opening up Elevation Dance Studios in Signal Hill, California.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So what kind of dance? I mean, salsa, ballroom? What kind of?
That, it's jazz, tap, ballet,
okay.
Contemporary, hip-hop. And they have five rooms and a large studio.
What's the name of their studio?
Elevation Studios in Signal Hill, California, which is located, it's a city within a city. Hmm. Signal Hill is located in the inside of Long Beach.
Okay.
And they've actually had three of their students make it on So You Think You Can Dance.
Oh, wow.
And her husband, Robert Lee, is also a dancer, and he had toured with Cheyenne and Britney Spears and you know, done a lot of TV work, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they sponsor some conventions around the country as well.
Right.
So they've done pretty well in the dance deal. Now, getting back to the Dazzle thing,
yes.
We're looking at, I think it was about 20 years ago. You know, as you get older, and I was the type of a, you know, your regular illusionist type of guy, kind of like Chuck Jones and Jan. That
a serious illusionist.
Yeah, my wife and I, when we first met back in about 1975, we spent a summer, you know, doing cruise ships and that kind of thing and corporate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the type of thing that I did, similar to my grandfather, you know, which he was a headliner in vaudeville. That meant he travel with a show, and it wasn't his show. It was other novelty acts, unlike Blackstone and
Thurston. Name did he go under?
The Great Leon. Actually, over the years, he was K-Dan Sammy. He was Chundahula. He was the Great Leon. I mean, you know, he would come up with, he would reinvent himself.
Each season.
Know? And of course, this is all in the book that Mike Caveney wrote about the Great Leon.
Great Leon. I've got that.
But back on my daughter, Alex, you asked the question, how did that get started?
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting story because a lot of people will think, wow, yeah, how long did it take you to develop that act? Well, it all came about as a lark because, like I said, about 20 years ago, I decided, you know, I'm done with this. You know, I'm older now. They want guys that are old enough to be my kids on stage. I turned into a lot of, you know, I saw some pictures. And I thought, yeah, man, this is just typical. Whatever. So I didn't pursue, you know, booking shows. And then a few years went by, and I would say about maybe 14 years ago, I get a call from Bill Smith, and he and Mike are going to put together a week at the Magic Castle and book all ex-Long Beach Mystics to fill all the rooms. And we would do, instead of having three people in the Palace of Mystery, we'd have like five. And each guy, instead of doing 15 minutes, they'd do about maybe 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you didn't work all week. You'd do maybe two nights or three nights. So everybody would get a turn. And so he asked if I was in. I said, sure, you know, we'll participate. And, of course, my daughter and I decided to, you know, put something together. Well, we'll do the broom. So she comes over and we're rehearsing this, the broom, and I put the music on for the broom, which was Up, Up, and Away with My Beautiful Balloon, right?
Right.
And she comes out with a balloon. And as I look over at my daughter, she's giving me the stink eye. And I look at her like, what? And she says, Dad, that music. And of course, like any other magician, the way we think, but that's the music for the broom. Sure. Regardless of how old the piece is or whatever, she says, man, that is really moldy. Well, we start laughing and kind of entertaining ourselves. I says, wow. So I says, you really want to hear some moldy stuff? And I pulled out this piece called Swonderful. And it wasn't an instrumental. It was had vocals on it and also a theremin. So we're laughing. We're having a good time. Not making any progress on the rehearsal, but we're entertaining ourselves. Well, we start clowning around. And my wife shows up, who had been out shopping. Says, well, what'd you guys get accomplished? So we showed her. And my daughter, Alex, is kind of camping it up. And some people in magic would say, oh, it reminds me of Carol, or it reminds me, you know, parody of Carol Roy, or perhaps Pam Thompson, or whoever. And which, by the way, she had not really seen any of these people, but she was inspired by the movie Strictly Ballroom. And there was a character named Tina Sparkle, which had an over-the-top, if you've ever been around ballroom stuff, you look at the way they're decked out and, mm-hmm. you know, bling. So she says, well, let me see. I can't call myself Sparkle. And I said, well, how about Dazzle? Yeah, okay, Dazzle. So we do the bit for her, and she's like kind of gum-chewing like Pam Thompson. But my wife says, wait a minute, listen to the music. So I got to credit my wife, Charlie, that said, it's wonderful, it's marvelous, you know, and that she's just happy to be on stage. And as Mike Caveney once put it, you know, her character is that of, here's this gal that is just like a Lucille Ball, just full of, you know what, and vinegar, just, you know, dying to be on stage, come hell or high water. She's going to make this broken down act with this magician work. And it's that type thing. So I'm playing the stuffed shirt old magician in tails, and she's a little over the top with her makeup, hair, etc., like a Lucille Ball. And she, you know, and basically that's it. I mean, you can compare it to like a Lucille Ball, or I'm George Burns and she's Gracie Allen,
right,
or whatever. And so that's kind of the whole gist of it. So
it started with that, changed. With that one particular broom suspension, and then you just developed it into a more...
Yeah, and we never did do the broom.
Oh, you didn't?
No,
we
did the act up to what you see today, up through the twister. And what was funny is after we did it, they asked us to come back and if we'd do a whole week. And we added the dueling zombies and the strip number to fill out about 11 and a half minutes of the act. So that's kind of how it started out. And, you know, going in there that first night, there were, I think it was Mike Weber, Stan Allen, Mark Kalin, Mike Caveney, and myself the first night doing the Palace. And then the next night it was like Victor and Diamond and Ron Anderson and let's see, it might have been... Mark Kalin again. Anyway, we just kept switching around. It was a fun, real fun week. And that was the start of Les Arnold and Dazzle. I then had people start coming around with, you know, offers.
Were you retired at that point?
About a year before retiring from school. Because when I was teaching, you know, it afforded me time to build props in the shop. Mm-hmm. The kids would work on it. And then I would have the summers off to do shows as well as, you know, holidays and weekends.
Right. That's an advantage of being a teacher, of having a summer off.
Yeah.
In a way, than having something that's an extracurricular activity that can actually bring in money instead of painting houses.
You know? Well, there were a lot of my contemporaries that I was jealous of in the beginning. And as I've gotten older and today, where I'm able to do this because I like to do it and not because I have to do it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I invested well, so I've got a retirement plus some other investments that, yeah, I don't have to get out of bed in the morning.
Well, is the act pretty much the same after you started developing that as far as when you're touring with that? I mean, I know that that's kind of a plug and play where you can do bits and pieces, you know, take some things out and or put things in to make it shorter or longer or whatever, but you have the act, I guess, basically. It's been pretty much the same for these years?
It really has. As far as adding to the act, my daughter would come back and go, you know what, we don't need to add time to the act because, you know, the humor of it, she says, you know, after about 10 minutes of it, an individual's had enough. Mm-hmm. So it's not that kind of, you know, where you're going to want to turn it into a 30-minute act. And, you know, I listen to her. She's the one who makes it happen. So, mm-hmm. you know, I respect where she's coming from now. Gay Blackstone had pitched us a number of years for Masters of Illusion. Mm-hmm. And the producers, we don't want, you know, we want youth. We don't want tuxedos. We don't want comedy. And basically they wanted guys that were probably in their 20s in faded Levi's, sneakers,
tattoos,
holes in their knees,
yeah.
a shirt that's hanging out. And they figured, you know, six magicians that looked like that was quite unique.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite see it. But
yeah, kind of like the halftime we had at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, but what happened is she pitched us for like 3 years. And on the third year, they had a different producer. They got rid of the one that really didn't like magic and didn't like us.
Wait a minute. They had a producer who didn't like magic and he was producing the Masters of... Okay, we're not
going to
get into
that. Don't get me started.
Okay.
But at any rate,
wow.
So then they called and said, you know, they got us. And obviously, you know, we were the novelty.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done the last
3 years,
four seasons.
Four, okay.
And this, you know, so we did add after doing our act, which they broke up into five segments and aired on five different episodes, and then reran them. Mm-hmm. So that first season that we were on it, we were on about a dozen times that it aired. Then
residuals are nice.
Yeah, they're great. We always look forward to those coming in. So then we had the next year they asked us back, and we did the clear sawing, my crystal sawing, as well as a rendition of my grandfather's fire and water illusion.
Hmm.
And with the when I say rendition, I mean because you know
with your comedic quest,
yeah,
twist.
My daughter's attitude is what sells it.
Correct.
And then the following year, she had the idea of. The multiplying dazzles. Now, like I said, she owns a dance studio,
right?
So we had access to dancers.
Yes,
you know,
little girls. Yeah.
Well, you know, and then her contemporaries are, you know, young adults. So I mean, you know, I've got talent there that which is great. And then last year we did a bit with my a trunk. Where I locked her in the trunk. You're expecting a substitution trunk, but the trunk and her vanished when I dropped the curtain, and she reappeared in the audience, coming hobbling down, still with her neck kind of sticking out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And when we dropped the bag, you know, took a bow, and then we picked up the bag again and produced my granddaughter, Frankie, out of the bag.
What was she, about 7 or 8 years old?
She was five.
Five, okay.
And she's quite the independent thinker. You know, it's like you know, she got a great response. I mean, she's a chip off the old block.
It looked like she had, as I recall, the way she did the ta-da thing.
Oh, yeah. You would have, if you went through central casting, you'd have gone through 1,000 kids before you got some attitude.
Yeah.
And then we said, hey, would you like to do it again next year? She looks at you and goes, no, nah, I'm okay. So that's where. And when they call back this year, now we will be on next year's Christmas special, but we tape. Because Gay said, you know, well, that when they asked us if we'd like to do it again, we had been tapped out. We had done everything. And I says, you know, I have other illusions, but they don't fit with my character. And we just decided, you know, enough is enough. So, but she says, you know, for the Christmas thing, you can repeat something. So we repeated an illusion with a different little twist for this Christmas special.
For the one coming up here in 19?
Yeah, that would be 2019, okay. December. And it was taped, like I said, 11 months in advance.
Yeah. Well, you know, your character reminds me a little bit of Cole and Company from the standpoint of kind of a things are going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I love them. Know. They're great. A little more ditzy. Now, our tricks are... we've tried different things over the years. The character, we do not do stuff that, you know, fails. For example, I hand my daughter in the beginning my cane. Mm-hmm. We tried various things. Once it was a floating cane where the line was on her. And as I turned around and I've got the cane, it floats over past her and then she catches it.
Mm-hmm.
We had to worry about lighting, et cetera, on that deal.
Right.
Then I had one where it was broke in half that was a metal cane so that when she grabbed the top part of the cane, the bottom fell and went clunk on the stage. That's a funny comedy bit.
Yeah.
But it didn't fit our character.
Uh-huh.
So we threw that out. Then there's the glove. When we toss the glove, one of the glove, you know, it doesn't hit the hat. It bounces. Well, another deal, we thought, well, what if the other one also hits the floor and then she picks it up? With the end of the cane being like the stick picking up papers in the park.
Oh, yes, right.
And that didn't seem to fit. So we would try a couple of different things occasionally and see how it would work. You know, if it's...
So you had a clear picture of what your character is and then kind of pick the tricks, although you might try different ideas, but in the end, it's like it will or won't work for the character
yeah.
that you envision.
Well, and everything's to music, which has been good for us because internationally we've been able to play in other countries that don't speak English.
Sure.
And...
That's what Marvin Roy said. If you have an act that is silent, you can work the world.
Well, we did... 1 week at the castle, we tried a couple of new things, and I came up with, it would be like,
help me?
The trick.
Sidekick.
Yeah, sidekick.
Sidekick, sure. Yeah, where you're shooting the pips off the card and the thing falls. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And jumbo sidekick.
Jumbo sidekick. Yeah. I've got a few friends that do that. And I had built this miniature army tank, and for a deal that was for 4th of July, and I wanted to. So I rode it in a parade in Long Beach, and I had this tank, which is about 6 feet long, about 3 feet wide, and about 3 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
And you can drive this tank with treads. It's very cool. And I decided I'd make this into an illusion. So I'm going to make it into a sidekick. Jumbo sidekick on steroids.
Wow. Okay.
So basically, and we toyed around with the fact of maybe speaking. So I tried a couple of different voices, you know, and after doing our act, closed with this trick where it was like, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, you know, and that got kind of a giggle. And then from there, we went into, you know, selecting the card. Well, with all the, you know, comedy bits and stuff, I've got a guy up out of the audience, and I ask if he'd like if he's up for having a little fun.
Mm-hmm.
He responds and says yes, and of course Dazzle comes running out with a pistol, and I asked if he would like to have a little fun, not would he like to have a little gun, you know, and it goes on from there. And so she's, you know, and he fires the gun, and of course instead of the pip falling off, it's the plume on her helmet, you know, falls down. And and then we had, then she comes running back on stage, and this time she's got a bazooka.
She's
going to fire the thing, and, you know, a T-shirt comes flying out and hits me in the groin. And on the T-shirt, it has the Three of Hearts. And I open it up, yes or no, is this your card? Well, it was the Two of Hearts, but, you know, so he's got to say no. And you got a free T-shirt out of the thing, and I throw it over his shoulder. Well, she's run off stage meanwhile, and she comes on with this tank. And, of course, we take this camouflage cloth. I says it looks a bit intimidating. So we cover the tank. The barrel sticks out through the cloth, and we put the deck of cards down the barrel. And I've got this guy holding a net, and he's going to catch the card. Well, the tank fires, and confetti goes out over the audience. And we whip the cloth off, and the entire tank vanishes. And she comes running up from the audience, where a minute ago she was driving the tank.
She was in the tank, yeah.
And on her back, it says, you know, the Two of Hearts. The spectator from the audience, he can't see that.
He's just seeing the front. Obviously.
He's only seeing the front. She comes up, faces the audience, and I apologize for not being able to find the card. Maybe the audience can help us out, obviously.
Funny.
Then they all yell out the card. Well, it didn't fit our character. My wife says, that's not funny. You know. So after, you know, trying to get the bugs out of it, and we did that for a few nights, I think it's a really, really good trick and routine.
Very original.
For somebody else.
Okay.
And so I've been mentioning it to different people.
So you've got a tank available on this prop available for sale.
You got it. It's taken up a lot of room in my garage.
Okay. But it is a reputation maker for somebody.
Hey, you know, and they get a tank that works. It has a mobility scooter on the inside of it that you cannot see that drives it. So you can actually drive the tank.
Yeah. That'd be fun, like parades and stuff.
Yeah,
like
and I've rode it in a couple of parades. Mm-hmm. So
that's funny.
That was going off on a little tangent when you asked about
a character bit development and the tricks you choose for him.
Of diversity there.
Wow. And, I mean, that was a pretty extreme case. I mean, usually people are thinking, okay, well, I'm going to do a card trick. Well, that doesn't fit me. I mean, here you've got, you know, thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours invested into something. It's like, it doesn't work, but we tried.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, it's funny because I get laughs from all my buddies like Bill, et cetera, when I bring up the fact of, hey, you know, this might work good for you. Hey, how about you, Nathan, Burton, or Ed Alonzo, or whoever else, or anybody doing comedy stuff?
Yeah.
And I'm willing to work for, I'm willing to say, hey,
I can see Ed Alonzo, you know, doing that. That'd be great. You know,
yeah.
You know, when I first, I bought my sub trunk, I probably had it for well over a year before we actually performed it. I was looking for and listening for the right music. You know, you've got to have the right music. You've got to, you know, and the choreography and everything, it's just got to be right. It took a long time. I mean, we'd rehearse it, but I just didn't feel right about the good music and the transition and putting something together. It just took a while.
You know, it's funny you should say that because that's what we primarily will look for, a piece of music first and then think about a trick to do to the music because it's the music that sells it. It's, it's her character hitting the beats. And I mean, you know, I mean, if you look at great straight acts like Mark and Ginger, you know, she's a dancer and they just, they hit the beat and it makes all the difference in the world. And another one was Jack Goldfinger. When, you know, his performing days, you know.
There's some songs that you hear and you think of that performer
again,
you know, like that Phoenix or whatever it is, you know, that I think of, you know, Jack and Dove, Goldfinger and Dove doing their illusions. Many things that Copperfield has done, you know, like with U2 or whatever. You know, when you hear certain music, it's good that it helps you promote your act.
Well, you know, back when I first met Goldfinger, in this, and this was the 60s, we were all young back then, and he would do stuff like Temple Screen and some really hokey stuff that he'd get from Grant Magic that no one else would even think of doing, and he was on It's Magic doing this stuff, and he could take a trick that was nothing and turn it into gold by just the way he hit the beat, and to this day, I mean, when he does like the comedy store newspaper to the stripper, I mean, it's great.
And that Chase the Queen kind of a thing, you know, with
Right.
Yeah, they're simple tricks, but he sells them, you know, with his presentation, the dance and the music and his excitement. And, you know, I think that that's important also, that you are fresh with every performance. It's easy just to mail it in because you've done it so many times, but the audience will recognize that also if you do it that way. So I think they can sense whether that you are having fun or not.
You know, I tell you, everybody's looking for a gimmick, and we were just lucky to hit on what we hit on by accident, and it afforded us a lot of opportunities to, you know, travel and do some great gigs, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And because in many cases, I mean, guys get into magic because one reason or the other, or they want attention, or, you know, it's a talent that, you know, is a positive attention. And but what happens is, you know, they gear their act to be somewhat of an Errol Flynn type of personality,
mm-hmm.
and might work while they're in their 20s. By the time they're getting into their 50s, you know, the same stuff just doesn't play. It's like Billy McComb. I mean, Billy McComb was quite successful, and in his youth was kind of a leading man. Well, you know, he was still working when he was in his late 70s, and, you know, he'd make the joke that was self-deprecating humor, like, I've got to speed this up. I've got to get back to the home. They have pudding tonight, you know. So he had a character. And you have guys like Matt King, who's got, you know, a funny side to him when you first look to him. So he puts himself in a plaid suit. You got Ed Alonzo. Ed Alonzo, I remember back, you know, I've known him since he was 15. You know, he was just straight magician, and he discovered, you know, he liked Harold Lloyd, and he was inspired by that. And so just the glasses and the hair, mm-hmm. it made all the difference in the world, and his career shot through the roof. And guys like Michael Finney or Jeff Hobson, I mean, you know, 100 guys that do egg bag, but nobody does it like Hobson. And it's just one little bit, and I can remember that first week that we did a whole week at the castle after doing this as a gag, and my daughter looked at me and was laughing and says, "I can't believe, Dad, you're doing the same old garbage that you've always done, but just with this little tweak of it." And it makes a difference. And there are guys today that are friends of mine that are getting up there to where their character doesn't play like it did in their youth when mm-hmm. they think they're Mr. Slick or Mr. Cool.
Right.
And the audience is like looking at them and laughing. But, you know, if you acknowledge the elephant in the room yourself and laugh at yourself first, now you've got control of it. And you could come up with a, you know, hey, gosh, you look at guys like Ray Anderson in Esther's Follies, mm-hmm. and that character, the amazing Frank, is it?
Yeah, Amazing Frank.
I mean, you just go, oh, my goodness. I mean, so whereas the assistant doesn't have to be some glamour queen.
Right.
You know, they come out and it's hilarious. So if you're a pudgy magician or somebody that's balding or somebody that's goofy looking or whatever, you know what? That's an asset. Take it to the bank.
You have to accept that. You know, Jason Alexander of Seinfeld fame was at the Mindvention, and he does mentalism. You've probably seen
sure.
the castle work as well.
Uh-huh.
And, in fact, I think he won an award.
He did.
Anyhow, I was speaking with him, and he had said that he was wanting to be a leading man when he was younger and getting into acting, but his agent was saying, "You're never going to be that. You're going to be like Falstaff. You know, you're going to be the funny guy, the rotund guy, you know, and just embrace it. You know, this is who you look like, and you can't be, you know, certain things because of your physical attribute. And you just have to sometime, you know, it may not be what you want, but you can find more success if you will actually embrace who you are."
Yeah, acting's not reality.
Good point.
It's just a show.
Yeah, yeah. You and I were talking on a different subject a couple of days ago, to kind of start to wrap up over here, about some ducks. I was telling you about Marty Hahn, who had an issue with some permitting for his rabbits because he had to actually have a disaster plan that the... he had to have a permit, first of all, from the USDA for his rabbit, and they would come in and make surprise inspections in his house to make sure that his rabbit was cared for. But then they said, well, you know, what is your disaster plan? Well, what do you mean? You know, well, if there's a hurricane or a fire or you should die, you know, how are you providing for your rabbit? What's going to be happening? What's the exit plan? I mean, they had to fill out all these forms and everything. And so anyhow, it really got a lot of traction and was on CNN. It was in the Washington Post. I mean, eventually the USDA, he got a call from them. And anyhow, I think they've since revised that a little bit. They were a little bit too harsh just on the birthday party magician's rabbit. But you were talking about how well you take care of your ducks that you in the show.
Well, I have... They have a nice big pen, and they have their own little pool for mm-hmm. their, you know, their standard of living is good. And I get my ducks from a slaughterhouse that is local, that they're selling poultry. You can go in and get a chicken. You can get, you know, fresh poultry and mm-hmm. Rabbits, whatever it is that is on your diet that you want to eat. And when I go in there, I tell them I'm a magician and that I'm going to use them for a magic show. And that I need the ducks alive. It's a better trick that way. And otherwise, they'll go, oh, you want a couple of ducks? Whang! And they'll lop off their head and give you the duck. I know that happened to Mark Kalin a few years back when he was starting and, you know, doing...
He went to a slaughterhouse, asked for a duck, and they brought him out the dead one?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, you know, somebody beefing about using animals, but yet they're chomping on a chicken sandwich while they're talking to you.
Sure.
But, no, I will get the pay for them, and I will not return them there. I figure, they did me a favor, so then I give them to someone or... I let them go in a park that has other ducks,
mm-hmm.
and I've had people say, oh, well, they won't survive in the wild, blah, blah. You know, I've driven past where there was only maybe a couple of ducks in there, and I've added a couple of ducks myself and gone by that for months and months mm-hmm. afterwards, and there are my ducks.
You recognize them?
Well, there was only maybe three ducks to begin with.
Okay.
And when you add a couple of ducks, now you've got five, you know. And
you can add.
They're still there, yeah. So, I mean, hey, otherwise they wouldn't have lived to be, you know, another day.
Right.
So, I mean, let's put things in perspective. And then when it comes to, you know, what the problem is you have the lay person, they don't know how the trick works.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to assume the worst. And in reality, as a magician, you know, and I had somebody that was, you know, had... question, you know, the treatment of the ducks and just the fact that they don't know how the trick works. It's an illusion. For mm-hmm. example, a guy who saws the lady in half, they don't cut her in half. You think they do. That's
right.
What makes it entertaining.
Hey, you're exposing secrets.
It's
here.
A trick. I mean, come on, get real. And the same thing with the animals. They have more room in the compartment than my daughter has, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, you know. And that's all part of it. But.
You know, coming full circle and going back and talking about Alexander, I believe it was him that I had read a story some years ago about where that he was touring and produced ducks. He had come back, I think, the next day at a theater and was looking for a ducks and couldn't find them and was talking to one of the stagehands, and they said, I took one home last night and just had it for dinner, you know, and I thought you can produce them as you want, you know. He said, no, it doesn't work like that. You know, for a rabbit to come out of a hat, there's got to be a rabbit in the hat to begin with, you know.
That's it. I mean, you know, but we live in a weird kind of society today.
We do with PETA and everything else, you know, too.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what is it that's coming up on your horizon? What's up in the future for you right now?
Well, next week we'll be doing one of Milt Larson's, Terry Hill's It's Magic shows in Palm Springs.
And that's not like a Brookledge. That's completely separate. I mean, that's like at... they used to have that at the Wilshire Ebel Theater years ago?
Correct. And now they have a circuit and goes around the country.
Oh, okay.
So they have an addition that will be opening at in Palm Springs. And then the following month, we will be in Cerritos, California, at the Cerritos Performing Arts Center with the It's Magic show. We're going to be at the Magic Collectors Expo, June 20th through 22nd. which you'll get to see Lance Rich give a great talk. And that's put on by David Sandy and Bill Smith, mm-hmm. and it should be a terrific convention.
And when you say Minnesota or Minneapolis?
Minneapolis, June 20th through the 22nd, and it should be a killer convention, so mm-hmm. I would recommend going to that.
So is this exclusively for collectors, people who are interested in the history of magic, or is it going to be a convention?
No, anybody who's interested, you know, housewives, homeless people, children of all ages, I'm sure they'll get a big kick out of it. Anybody who has the money is welcome to come.
But they talk also just about some historical things. And
exactly.
So it's educational as well as entertaining.
They will have collections there, and they will have
because they no longer have the L.A. Conference history.
That's correct. So if you know, you're hungry for that,
yeah.
be sure to go there.
Okay.
And, David Sandy always puts on a great production.
He does. You know, he's a stickler for details. Maybe it's that OCD part of him or something, but he's very good. As a result, we all benefit.
That's correct. That's correct.
Now, you're going to be in Scottsdale also at IBM, is that right?
For the IBM convention.
That's cool.
We'll be there. And
performing your show, you and your daughter?
We'll be performing there. I'll be attending Magic Live. That'll be in August. Mm-hmm. Just going there to have fun with my old buddies. And mm-hmm. Just off the top of my head, I've built a few props for the Kalins recently.
Something new, you mean?
Yeah. Okay. And they're always, besides performing, they produce other programs and stuff. So, any rate, keeping busy. Like I said, you got to start slowing down sometime.
That's good.
And anyway, there you have it.
Well, Les, has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed this.
Likewise, Scott, and keep up the good work. I appreciate visiting with you this weekend, and I wish you all the best in the future with your podcast.
Thanks. There. I know that our paths will cross again. Well, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so I always like to close with asking my guests of what your philosophy of life is. What is your what do you live by? What's your magic word or phrase, your philosophy? Could be a sentence, a paragraph. What's important to you?
Hey, have a good time. Do what you want to do. Have fun with it. And be a good guy with your friends and your spouse. I've been married to a wonderful wife for 40 years.
Great.
Charlie. And she's terrific. You know, hey, try and look at the bright side of whatever comes your way. And if you can go down some path of... you've heard it. It sounds like a broken record, but do what, if you're going into a career, do what makes you happy and it's fun. Then it's not like work.
That's right. Then you never work another day in your life.
That's it.
Yeah.
So
always look on the bright side of life.
There you go. And try and stay healthy and, all of that good stuff. Keep busy. You never retire. Just, you might retire from one thing, but mm-hmm. take up something else. So that's it.
Yep. A lot of good stuff in there. Great conversation. Thank you very much. I always enjoy chatting with you here. It was wonderful. Thanks, Les.
Sure. Hey, have a good day. Bye-bye.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Les Harnell. This is Scotty out.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life.
Well, that was some fun. I certainly enjoyed that. You know, at the beginning of the podcast there, Les had said, I think it's only going to take about 5 minutes. I really don't have that much to say. Well, obviously he did. I kind of got him talking a little bit there. And it was great to hear some of those stories, to hear about kind of the beginnings of the Long Beach Mystics and how he developed his act and all the rest of this. And of course, some of his creativity that went into it. I think one of the real takeaways here is how that he stays true to his character from the standpoint that he knows who he is. And, you know, I think that's something that's important for all of us to know who we are and be able to describe that. In other words, not just a magician, but you, if you are a mystifier of some sort, who is it that is your target market? Who is it that you say that you are? You know, once that you identify your character, then you can find tricks that and presentations that will fit with your character. So basically, first is know thyself, but that may take a while before you kind of sort that out and decide what it is that you want to be and who it is you want to be to the audience.
audience, basically. And so that's going to take a little bit of self-introspection. And perhaps that through these different podcasts over the years and the hundreds of episodes that we put out over here, that you are starting to get some sort of an idea of some of the other people's characters and how that they have put their life and their soul into who they are, basically, so they become who they are. I mean, and I'm talking about a lot of people who all of us know, let's say, who are going to be like Jeff Hobson, who's going to be like Michael Finney, and so many people who have defined characters and who they are, basically. And so, anyhow, you kind of get the idea. And I like, again, the fact that once you identify who you are, as Les Arnold has done, then he knows what tricks will fit for that particular stage character or not. And you don't have to be a stage magician. Think about your close-up. I mean, if you're going to be a street guy, you're going to be like David Blaine, you know, are you going to be, you know, somebody else? You're going to be funny. Anyhow, this is a whole different subject. You kind of get the idea. So know thyself and then design your trick and then keep those tricks and presentations specifically designed for your character. All righty. Well, now it's time for Three for Thursday. We've got three great tricks that came to us from Murphy's Magic Supplies. These are tricks that are available from your favorite magic dealer, and they're available online, or you can probably purchase them through your favorite brick-and-mortar magic shop, which I'm always, of course, endorsing and suggest that if there is a brick-and-mortar magic shop near you, then please go and help these guys out. But if not, then please just go online and you can find these things. All three of these are really good, and they are different from one another, and only one of them happens to be a card trick. So, let's get started. First trick up for a review is called Minto, and it's available from Vanishing Ink. This is a cool little trick in which basically you have some headphones that you can borrow or use your own, and it's a wire headphones, and you have a roll of mints. Let's say they're Lifesavers, or in the UK I think they're called Polo, but basically it's some mints. You pop a mint into your mouth, you then hold the headphones in each of your hands, and then put the wire into your mouth, close your mouth, and as you open it, you now have the mint that is around the headphone, around the wire, basically. And you can show it, you can kind of move it back and forth and show that it's sliding back and forth, and then you can slide it all the way off, pop it into your mouth, crunch it, and swallow the mint, and so it's gone. That's pretty cool, but as some people may not like to do something perhaps with your mouth, or that particularly if you're going to be using someone else's headphones, they're, again, it's not a gimmicked headphone wire or anything by any means. Anyhow, there are a couple of other methods. In the link that you get, it does give you three different ways for doing it, one of which is one that doesn't require this going into your mouth, so that you can actually put a mint into your hand. You take a mint out of the package, you offer them to people, you take one, put it in your hand, you then put the headphones over your hand. When you close your hand to make a fist and you open it, it is now encircled around the wire. And you can again slide that back off, and then you pop the mint in your mouth and crunch it, and you're gone. So you cleaned up. Anyhow, I like this trick. It's very cool. There was a young man, Jacob Rangel, David Rangel's son, who had done it at a recent magic meeting, and I hadn't seen that before. And it fooled me. I was thinking it was a different method, and he got me. And so I think this is a pretty cool little thing that can be done fairly impromptu, as long as you have the gimmick, and it's called Minto, and you can get that gimmick available from your favorite magic dealer. And I would say, as far as recommendation, yeah, I'd recommend this. This is pretty cool. It is something different. It's not your usual card trick. It is something that is different and certainly visual and something that they will remember. I think it's very clean. The handling is good. They give you two or three different suggestions for some handling, and I like them all. Very good idea, and I recommend it. Minto. Next up from the other brothers is a trick called Snapped. I saw the video on this, and it looks pretty cool. Justin Flom does this also. There's a taffy candy called Airheads that we have here in the U.S. And anyhow, it can be done with any kind of a candy wrapper, if you will. It's just that the gimmick that you get with this, it fits great into the Airheads, and it comes with the gimmick in an Airhead, as well as an additional gimmick that you can use for something else. As the other brothers explain on their link, the video link will show you how that can be done with receipts. Let me explain what the effect is. You will show something, let's say again like this taffy candy, and you hold it behind, let's say, your wallet, deck of cards, a coffee cup, I guess, or whatever that you have, perhaps something that might be a little bit more flat like a deck of cards or your wallet, but nevertheless, then all of a sudden just snap of the finger, literally, it snaps and it's gone. And then you can. There are a variety of suggestions that Daryl and Daryl, the other brothers, will suggest in the video, in which that it perhaps can go inside of your wallet. You open the wallet and take the candy back out, or perhaps that because it's a blue wrapper, that you're using a red deck of cards, and that inside there's a blue card which matches the one that they had selected. There are also a cool little variation is of using a receipt. So this way that you have a receipt that's behind your wallet, you snap this, and then whenever you open your wallet, there's now that receipt that is inside of the wallet. And there are, again, some other variations that they have of this. It certainly looks great if you see it on YouTube, on the videos. If you want to make something that's going to go viral, this is pretty cool. I mean, it just vanishes in a snap. You just snap your fingers and it is gone. And you could do a couple things. I think the thing that I had seen on the video the other brothers had done, or Justin Flom had done, there were two or three of these things. And just with again, snap your finger, just in a moment that they're gone. And hence the name Snapped. And it's available from the other brothers, and I would recommend it. It is pretty cool, very self-working, something that definitely is for beginners, that anybody can do pretty much out of the box, but there are some things that you can you should pay attention to in the video instructions to make sure that you are presenting this correctly. So, cool little thing I would recommend. It's not something that I would carry around personally and would use a lot, but I like it. It might be for you, so I would recommend it. Again, called Snapped from the Other Brothers. And finally, our third for Thursday is going to be Fact, which is actually from Caleb Wiles. It's called the Fully Automatic Card Trick. FACT, get it? That's the acronym, FACT. And Caleb Wiles had presented this on the Penn and Teller Foolist TV show, and although he didn't fool them, it will definitely fool your audiences. Penn and Teller are very sharp guys, obviously, and couldn't be fooled, but this one will have, I'm sure, had their heads, them scratching their heads before they actually had come to the conclusion as to the method. It is very devious. It is one of these things, it's kind of like speaking a foreign language that you're going to have to use on a frequent basis in order to remember the setup, because when it says it's self-working, pretty much it is. Once you've got the deck set up, this is why it's for beginners as well, but it is a professional act or presentation, certainly, that will play well for anybody, regardless of your skill level. But the reason it's self-working is because once that you get the instructions, cards, and everything put in the stack that you want, they are following the directions. You give them the deck of cards, it's in their hand, and they are actually, they select a playing card, and basically what happens is then through a series of shuffles and cuts, when they turn it over, there is an instruction card that will say to bury your card in the deck, and then you're going to be cutting them into piles, and then you shuffle up those piles, and as they turn it over, there are more instructions, and at the end, there is a revelation, which when they, you are not touching the cards at all, they're turning over the cards, and as they do, it will say you had selected the Three of Hearts or whatever that your card might be. So it actually has written on the blank side, on the back side of the card, on a blank, like a face card with a blank on the other side, anyhow, that would be giving the revelation. Anyhow, it's something that I really like, because you are having hands off. It's something that I wouldn't carry around a lot of extra decks of cards, but this is one that you can do, and it makes sense. Even when you're showing the cards, you're going to say, look, there are some instruction cards in there, because you may see that there are no indexes or indices on some of the cards as you fan them out, and it makes sense because you say you're going to be doing this and the instructions will tell you what to do. So the magician is not necessarily having to give any instructions, as the deck is pretty much doing itself. It's one of those things, well, almost, that you can sit down and watch them perform it. There are a few things in which you have to handle it yourself to make sure that it's all being done and oriented properly. Very clever. I certainly like the way this was thought through and developed, and Vanishing Ink had put this deck together. And Caleb has a very creative mind, and I highly recommend this. A really cool trick, again, called Fully Automatic Card Trick, or FACT, from Caleb Wiles, available from Vanishing Ink. Highly recommend it. So there you have it. Three really good tricks that are completely different from one another. Only one card trick. The one thing, as I mentioned, snapped actually can be performed as a card trick with a invisible deck. That was one of the ideas that the other brothers had. Again, very clever. Kind of like the idea. So there was a Minto, and then you had snapped, and of course, fact, which was the fully automatic card trick. And so, again, these things are available from your favorite Magic dealer. So go out and check them out. And you could do me a favor if you will just, whenever that you are placing your order, in the comment section saying, I heard this reviewed on the Magic Award podcast. A lot of times they're wondering where these things, how people find out about them and whether they want to, and when they do make their purchase, you know, what is it that actually motivates their sale? And it will kind of help us a lot, certainly, if they start hearing more often that these are coming from some suggestions that we've made here. And as you know, I try to be as honest as I can with these kinds of reviews of things that I would work on myself, or I'd perform, and things I do, and I can give you an honest review of whether I like it or not. And so again, this hopefully will help you with your purchasing decision, and you can help me by just telling them, I heard it on the Magic Word podcast and I had to get this. It really sounded cool. And some of these things are available then also on the Magic Word podcast in our Magic store. So if you don't have a Magic store where that you are dedicated to helping them as a customer, then perhaps you might like to help us out, because a little bit of whatever is left over is something that goes back towards helping to fund the podcast. And so we thank you guys very much for listening to this podcast and to these reviews, and hopefully these have helped. Well, all right. This has been a pretty full episode, and I want to thank you guys again for tuning in and for listening. And also a reminder to sign up for our weekly newsletter. When you go to our website at themagicwordpodcast.com, there should be a little pop-up that comes up there. And if not, you can go over to a place that says subscribe, and you can subscribe to our newsletter and keep up to date as to what's going on from week to week, and also some suggestions from the archives. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to keep busy. Have a good time, and do what you want to do. Enjoy your family and friends, and always look on the bright side of life.
I told him. I said to him, Bernie, I said, they'll never make that money, mate.